Jones.
And Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade. Sound familiar? It's, you know, shit dudes say. About family, women, philosophy, politics, history, people, money, pop culture, kids, fighting, business, life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com. This is Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike. Jones, I don't know why everyone's all up in arms tonight. Because I saw Ariana Grande bomb at the United Center in Chicago, and it was no big deal. It was no big deal at all.
That's ridiculous. I can't even.
Is it too soon?
Oh, my God, dude.
I mean, isn't the world a little bit... haven't we gotten callous to this at this point? We're just going to be one of these things where cars drive up on sidewalks, lorries run us over while we're celebrating 4th of July or Bastille Day, or if we go to a concert, you know, preferably you die on the way into the Ariana Grande concert, not on the way out. That's my only gripe. You don't kill us on the way out. You kill us on the way in. $80 I spent for two Ariana Grande shirts, Jones. I would have liked to have saved that dough in hindsight.
Okay.
it's too early for it. Okay, it's too soon. Let's get to the other dough.
I mean, to be honest with you, like, it's not... I mean, I'm not trying... I'm also trying to not, like, just, like, bury you either. Like, oh, come on, dude. But no, I wouldn't make...
You wouldn't make light of it.
Okay, I mean, fine. It's...
I'm making light of Ariana Grande and people who go to her concerts, including me. I just brought my daughters there to see her in Chicago 2 months ago, and it was a fabulous time. Although she got outperformed by her opening act. Never a good sign if you're going to be a pop superstar.
Little Mix. That's definitely a horrible sign.
Little Mix put her to shame. When Little Mix left the stage, these four ladies, the show went downhill. And quite frankly, I don't think we should rule out that this was an attack on gay people, because the crowd was, honest to God, 75% gay. And then you would think it would be all like families and whatnot, but it was like half gay men and then half like families. It was a very strange mix.
Okay. I do just think it is a cultural attack on the West.
You're going attack
regardless
on the West.
Of demographic.
Right on. Okay. And does this have anything to do with Trump and Saudi Arabia, Jones?
No, I don't think. That's what I think the scary thing about this is. I don't think it matters at all. When I first heard this news, I even texted my sister, and I was like, you know, there are people out there that would love to get Wrigley Field. Like, there, I think this is just the world that we're going to live in for as long as you and I are going to be on it. On this planet, that there will just be random. A Bonnaroo will be a target. Wrigley Field will be a target. Super Bowl, of course, will always be a target. And sometimes these guys are, I mean, there was a Champions League game just a couple months ago where they, I think the guy who was going to blew himself up outside of the venue.
You know what? With you, I got to say, dude, time is starting to compress dramatically. Like, things that happened like a year ago, you go like just a couple of weeks ago. Have you noticed that about yourself?
Well, no. Wasn't it within this Champions League season?
It seemed like that was like in the fall. But at any rate.
Well, that's within the Champions League season. The Champions League starts.
I know. That was like 8 months ago. But at any rate, regardless, it's there are terrorist attacks every day. I almost, you know, what are you going to do? I'm honest to God, I'm like saying, what are you going to do?
Well, no, you have to go live your life. No, you have to go live your life. I mean, it's just...
we should laugh at the terrorists and thumb our nose at them. There's going to be a Bataclan. There's going to be the Champions League. There's going to be the Lorries. It's just going to happen. And we're just going to pick ourselves up and keep on rolling, I say.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I get you're left with no other choice, of course. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I kind of grow frustrated. I just think to myself, you know, to anybody who wants to say like, oh, you know, look at all these other faiths and they have all these other problems. You know, that's been a struggle with me because I know a couple of Muslim people personally love them, think they're great. But when I look at like a group of people, like I take, for example, I always use this as an example. I was born and raised Irish Catholic, and I have no hesitation in telling you the Catholic Church was an organization that actively protected child molesters.
Watch it, Jones.
By the hundreds, by the thousands.
Yes.
They acted. No, they
still
they absolutely,
do. And they
knew
still
what
do.
Was going on.
They still
so
do.
So the Catholic Church supported child molestation.
And ostensibly, yes.
They absolutely.
And enabled it, yes. And facilitated it, yes.
They absolutely. On all right. counts, they're guilty. So if I, born and raised Irish Catholic, can say something like that, you know,
well,
why does it always seem that we're so quick? And maybe I'm just going back to like Barack Obama speeches and things like that of, you know, some guy would blow himself up in the middle of some city center. And then we were always instructed, well, this is not Islam. I do want to see that if this is in fact, an act of Islamic terror, and I'm betting that it is, that there is some
what?
Element of ownership.
No.
Of just not.
Who's going to stand up? That's a problem. There's no Pope in that like religion. Right. So like, that's part of the issue is that there's not, you know, the issue in terms of how you're framing it is that you want to see some sort of an outward, you know, decrying and stuff, but it's like, you know, there are marches and, you know, I know some people who are Muslim too, and they speak ill of terrorism. Like what are they supposed to do? Honest to God, what are they supposed
okay,
to do?
Okay, here's an idea. Then the next step should be that the U.S. spokesperson for CARE
right.
is supposed to, like, there has to become some element of, because you just can't let it go. You wouldn't let a child get away with doing something wrong and just going, I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? And then you go, I guess they don't know what to do.
Well, okay, so would it make you feel better if like 1,000 Muslims all gathered on Daily Plaza right now and
sure.
had a, yeah, that would make you feel better?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look, look at the way that people get affected when all of a sudden, say, political leadership or cultural leaders start saying something along the lines of, hey, I support gay marriage. Over time, the populace's attitude changes and gay marriage becomes the law of the land. People find it acceptable even in their way of life, even if they're heterosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
But because there are people who are out there that are going, they're looking and they're finding some level of leadership where they say, we're going to speak about this or we're going to get you to speak about this. Then all of a sudden things change. Like, you know, there are culturally, this country has changed a lot in the last 20 to 25 years, last 10, 15 years. And it changes because of those discussions. But if you never have those discussions, if you never had, if everybody went the route, and it's not to hammer Ronald Reagan, a lot of people weren't saying the word AIDS in the 80s. But if you still had no political leaders that were willing to say the word AIDS,
right,
where would the attitudes be?
Well, I'm sorry I baited you. It's that's too raw. It's too fresh. It's too new. I'm the guy who laughs at wakes. I'm the guy who does not, you know, I try not to get too upset about this stuff because it's like, you know, outside of, you know, so there'll be a lot of people who will be putting the British flag over their Facebook photos tonight and you know
IMGB,
yeah right and it's like I don't know, like that to me that's as empty as a 1,000 Muslims gathering out at Daily Plaza. To me it's like it doesn't do anything. So you know,
see, I think that like we are, you know, we are Charlie Hebdo or we are GB or whatever you want to say, I do think that's empty. But if you could suddenly get people out in mass in some city center or be able to make like the U.S. head of CARE step up and hold a press conference, you would see change. I believe you would see change in 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 years, or you would at least know who's who in terms of, you know, this veil of, I don't like terrorists either, but what do you want me to do? And then nothing changes. I think that it would take 10. Nothing's going to happen overnight.
Yeah, this 10 to 15 year stuff, I mean, this is 100 years in the making, man. And some would say this is thousands of years in the making. This clash of civilizations has been going on for thousands of years. So, you know, I guess I get back to my most basic stance, which is, hey, man, I want people who are Irish to live in Ireland and people who are Syrian to be in Syria. And everyone should just go back to their respective corners, like in boxing. This is one big giant boxing match. Everyone go back to your respective corners. And so let's all separate again.
Then who would be here?
Who would be here? Well, yeah, right. This is the one, you know, melting pot, I guess.
Right.
I get to stay. I don't have to go back. I don't have to go back to Ireland.
Okay.
But I get to stay, but then all these other folks who are migrating, they have to all go back. That's it. That's it. End of story. Meanwhile, we're derailing from the one aspect of death that matters the most, Jones.
Okay. This, now, and I would like to note.
Yeah.
I did suggest that we hold off on this, but you dove into the Ariana Grande.
Well, that's right. You know,
you had to hit your jokes. Then we went in.
No, stop. It's breaking news and we covered it. And now we'll let the facts unfold over the next couple of days. It will consist of a bunch of hand wringing that matters not. And no one will know anything more than we know really tonight that somebody walked into the Manchester Arena and blew himself up with a bunch of nails and gruesomely blew up. At this stage, 19 people and injured 50. And so the death count and the body count will change. But other than that, I don't see a whole lot else changing. So let's just charge forward, Jones, and talk about the death that really shook people up. I think this death will have shaken people up more than this Ariana Grande thing. And it's the death of Chris Cornell and this was the best song ever. And this is when I looked, I was like Beavis and Butthead. I looked at the screen, bro, and I was like, this is the greatest rock and roll band of all time, Beavis. Like, he looked badass in this video, bro. This is the last time the guy had any muscle tone, I think. You didn't know what ethnicity he was? Was he Latino? Was he Samoan? Like, who knew
what this guy was? That's a good call. You didn't really know. He kind of did look a little Samoan.
Yeah, it like just like he had pecs and he had biceps, and it was like this song was so muscular, dude. And and there's chains and there's fire, and it was like everything that like a teenage boy could ever dream for.
the fire and the rock, I get, but like every teenage boy just dreaming of arms and pecs.
Pecs and fire and like long black hair that
you
could
mean
be
like for themselves. They would wish for themselves.
Yeah, just this. Yeah, like this is your entry music into the ring. This is like you dreamed of like this being like your theme song, dude. Like until Eminem came out with my de facto theme since then in the late 90s, this was my theme, right? So
what is the Eminem song? I'm sorry, Eminem.
Lose Yourself, of course, naturally, man.
I would guess that. I didn't know you had such a strong tie to Lose Yourself.
You're right on, dude. So you got to start your day with something badass, and so this was my song in the 90s, right? But like him dying last week, I didn't like freak out about it. I kind of took this laughing at death pragmatic approach, but a lot of people were really torn up. It's like, you know, this was the soundtrack to to some of my favorite greatest memories in the 90s, and now I'm sad.
I have to say it did bother me. It did bother me because I think this death really had me contemplating
your own death.
The totals of death from our era of music. You know, when you go down, you could really go on. Sadly, the list is so incredibly long. And that was one thing where it was like just looking at this death. And then when you just looked at how just another name onto that list of 90s rock stars, it's just so damn painful. Like, it just feels odd to look back at your youth and go, dead. Reality star, dead. Doesn't do music anymore. Reality star, dead.
Oh, there's a lot of reality stars now.
Well, I mean, maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't say a lot. But Dave Navarro, he was doing like that tattoo show.
Yeah.
Like he used to be so dark and cool.
Yeah, he sold out.
He decided to do that. You know, that was always kind of
right.
Kind of a little bit soft.
That's my buddy.
So that was, and then even like I was never into Blink 182, but then Travis Barker started doing some weird MTV, you know, home with my wife kind of thing. Yeah. But regardless,
yeah, decidedly not very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just tough to watch. But, you know, I look at that list now, like it's a sizable list. Like if you go down the list of 90s rock stars that are now no longer with us, Andy Wood, Mother Love Bone, 1990, dead.
Yeah,
Kurt Cobain.
Wait, how did he die? How did the Mother Love Bone dude die?
Andy Wood died from a drug overdose. I want to say it was heroin. He died like a month before Mother Love Bone's debut album was going to be released.
What a jerk. Unbelievable.
That is a little jerkish there. Now, it does have to be say the lion's share of the members of Mother Love Bone went on to become Pearl Jam. It worked out, but you have that in 1990. Kurt Cobain, 94, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Shannon Hoon, Blind Melon, 1995, cocaine overdose.
Oh, so this is not limited to the grunge movement. This is 90s.
No, I'm going 90s because it is really grim if you keep it to just grunge and you only look at Seattle. Plus, I never really liked when people just try to talk about 90s rock and they go, well, it was grunge and it was Seattle. And it's like, well, no, there were a lot of other bands. Like, Seattle had the grunge movement. That's great. But there was a lot of other things that were going on musically.
And so will you include hip hop and can we throw in Tupac and Big E?
If you want to go that route, Tupac gets gunned down in 96. Big E gets gunned down in 97.
Oh.
Bradley Knoll, drug overdose, Sublime lead singer, 96.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put this name on the list. Because I found out some information yesterday that made me feel like I should put him on the list.
Okay.
But Jeff Buckley died in 1997. And in light of Chris Cornell dying 20 years later in 2017, I learned yesterday that Jeff Buckley, Chris Cornell were good friends. And when Jeff Buckley died, Jeff Buckley's mother reached out to Chris Cornell and Chris Cornell pieced together his posthumous album, Songs from My Girlfriend, The Drunk.
You know that definitively. Do we have to fact check that?
Yes.
Okay. And he drowned, that guy.
He drowned. He did drown. So I know there's a reason to be.
Was he high on heroin?
But I was like, he's tied this. There was that Soundgarden tie. So I'm like, okay.
But was he high on heroin and then he drowned? Or he like legitimately like just went out too far and couldn't get back? Or a riptide took him out? Do we know?
Can we just say that he was on heroin and then went out too far just to keep him on the list?
Count him in. Throw him on the heroin heap.
Got it. Okay. Lane Staley. Drug overdose. Well, I don't even know if it was one overdose, but just multiple overdoses during the course of his life.
It's always the 117th that gets you, Jones. I've said it 117 times. If I said it once.
Scott Weiland, 2015.
Ugh.
And then Chris Cornell. I mean, that's an extensive list. And that list really, when Cornell went onto that list, and it's not like I really put him above all else on that list, but he was like one of the big names of that era. And it just got me thinking. Because you and I have talked about for the longest time, like rock's dead. And it is. I mean, I understand that there are people out there that say they're doing rock music. There's a handful of people that do rock music. But where it was at in the 90s to now, I don't ever seeing it get back that way.
Right.
And I thought to myself, your two boys, we could throw in your two girls if you'd like.
No, do not.
Okay. Your two boys, if they were to go out and artistically pursue rock music, like writing their own lyrics, doing their own music, like not just doing like the barbecue cover band high school stuff.
Hey, I'm right here. You're talking to me.
You know, but you know what I'm saying.
Was that a shot?
You had like one of your sons who's like, man, I would want to try to do an album of my own stuff. And I thought to myself, like, you would love that, right?
Oh, totally, dude. Like, yes. Are you asking me if I want my sons to be in bands? Like a legit band?
Well, see, I always kind of assumed you would. But now, after the death of Chris Cornell and after I put this list together of all these dead rock stars from our era of music, like, wouldn't you now, even though we always rip on Milky Chance and 21 Pilots and all those bands, wouldn't you maybe rather have Dom or Jack go that route, live?
Yeah, and be like mortgage brokers or something safer.
Yes. Yeah. Versus going out there, becoming rock gods, and then just being all strung out.
Yeah, so what you're essentially saying is that in order to be great, in order to have the rock god status, you have to, I guess, sell your soul to the devil and be a heroin addict. Are you saying that heroin brings out the creativity in you, so in order to achieve that apex, you got to be strung out on heroin or doing some other reckless stuff?
Yes.
I agree with you.
It does seem that way. In order to creatively release your brain and have abs after 40, you should do heroin.
No, you're going to buck that tradition, dude. You're going to be the one dude post 40 who has never even seen heroin.
I have never even seen heroin.
You've never even seen it. Who has abs?
But here's my theory on what, because you look at, okay, let's go down the 21 Pilots Milky Chance route for a minute.
Oh, Harry, do we have to?
Harry Styles of One Direction came out with a rock album at the end of last week.
Oh, he did.
And it was like this big, the big buildup had been, oh, it's going to be a rock thing. And it's going to be, you know, he's from the UK. So he's like, it's going to be Oasis-y. And even the members of Oasis were like, oh, God, I can't wait to see what Harry Styles thinks is Oasis-y. And then the album, the songs came out and I listened to them and I saw the video. There was Sign of the Times is the name of the song. Uh-huh. And I saw the video, I hear the music, and it had this Bowie-ish feeling to it. And he even had like a long coat, and it wasn't a Union Jack coat, but it kind of looked a little bit like Bowie-ish from Earthling. And I was like, wow. And then all of a sudden I was like, this isn't terrible. This isn't awful.
What a ringing indictment.
No, but it was like, this isn't terrible. And I was like, it's kind of good. I really was like, this isn't too bad. And then a dude I used to play hockey with was like, you like it because structurally it sounds like Space Oddity. And I'm like, you're right. And then I went and looked up the album, and no track on that album has less than six writers. Harry Styles didn't write that song or any of those songs. He had a team of people that came out and said, why don't we have him do a Bowie-ish thing?
Oh, no.
That's what happened. So would you want to see your son go the Harry Styles route? Even though at first blush it looks like he's pulling it off. But deep down you know he has someone named like Tommy Starr and Teddy Z, like styling his hair certain ways and stand over here and look brooding. And so
yeah, so that's all music today, right? All these bands, they all feel like they're manufactured in a lab, right? That they're all part of a focus group, making of the band. Right. There's a Lou Pearlman behind all of them, that there are algorithms being used to
there are.
And, yeah, right. And even like the radio stations are in on it where they're speeding it up to a certain, and maybe there's a Hertz frequency thing that where it, you know, it kind of tricks your brain. Kind of like they say, like excitotoxins in your food, like Chinese food, the excitotoxins trick your brain into thinking it tastes good, but it really is dreck and stuff. So it's all like, it's all fake, you know, like I don't know if the anti-Chinese food industry put that out there, but the concept of excitotoxins are tricking your brain into thinking food is good. Maybe they're doing that orally. That's AU, orally, to trick our brains that this music is okay. And like even what you just said is blowing my mind, that they're recycling old tunes and repackaging them, which, you know, hey, that's music. That's art, really, honestly. It's, you know, people are ripping each other off, or they're, you know, they're inspired by other people, or, you know, they're blatantly, you know, white guys ripping off black music, repackaging it for the white audiences, whatever it is. It's a time-honored tradition in art to rip off, right? So, sure. But what you're describing is so much more nefarious that these bands that I detest and that we and many people in our generation, the older generation, we detest it like it has no soul and no originality and so on. Like, it's one thing to be derivative, but this stuff just feels so thin and like two dimensional.
That's my thing. Like, I hear that stuff and I think like Harry Styles, like, I don't know, maybe the guy's gotten drunk like four times in his life. And then I compare it to other people who are like artists, but it's kind of like, I started to think like, God, it does seem like anyone who I really thought was like a great artist or thinks a great artist, they seem to go through this drug difficulty. And I started to think, do drugs play a central part in rock and roll? Because when you're all whacked out, the next thing, you're just really worried about your next high. So when it's time to sit down and write music, maybe that's not as big a priority. So you're comfortable taking a chance or going down an artistic route. Whereas all of a sudden when artists that were always doing drugs get clean, then all of a sudden they don't have that distraction of drug abuse. This sounds so weird that I'm framing this like drugs are a great thing, but they don't have this distraction of drug abuse. And now all of a sudden they're very aware of Billboard and what their competitors are doing. And it's almost like the drugs take them out of their head so they can create what they were supposed to create.
Right, right. No, I smell what you're cooking there. Like, you know, that maybe the drugs are they sate them to a certain degree, and so does music and creative catharsis that sates them. But ultimately, and when they're being sated by going through that catharsis, they're laying themselves bare, and that vulnerability and that like raw emotion and all that nonsense and that grit that comes out, man, that's what we really dig. That's our excitotoxin,
right?
Whatever. Yes. Like and that's what we don't get from Milky Chance or 21 Pilots or these bozos running around today, man. Like, it's not real, and it's not raw the way the good stuff is. But hey, like, so I guess what you're saying is like, to a degree, okay, so wait a second though. Like you just mentioned, when people get off of the drugs, that brilliant, bro. Like, when I always said when Guns N' Roses gave up heroin, they turned so lame. Like, they were the worst. All of a sudden, they're doing, like, Bob Dylan covers, which it's a decent song, but it's a Bob Dylan cover. And then they're doing right. Paul McCartney and Wings covers. And I'm like, what happened to, like, the seedy underside of the L.A. nightclub scene and stuff and struggling to make it and all of that cool stuff? Now you guys are living in mansions, you're clean, and you guys are lame. You're covering people.
And I'm not saying, like, you can be clean and write good music and go out and tour and be great. But in a way, it's almost like if you're watching an athlete, as much as we all want to see them compete clean, or at least most people do. Some people really don't care at all. But regardless of where you stand on that, when they're on drugs, they're better. I mean, there's something to be said about whether it's the body or the brain. If you're chemically enhancing it for a period of time, you're going to get more out of it. You just can't overmodulate.
And so, and we're going to take it at face value that the Milky Chances and the 21 Pilots and the lame-o bands of today are drug free, because I would say let's give it 15 or 20 years and see, because they all might be hanging themselves from belts in Detroit hotel rooms in the year 2031.
Maybe, but here's the, I don't see it playing out that way. Like, maybe someone will be like an alcoholic or something. But like,
yeah, and like, you know, that ain't no big deal, man. You could totally be functional and do
but
that.
like a drug addict, I don't see it.
That's ridiculous. I don't know, man. Okay, so let's put that aside and let's get back to the crux of your premise, which is, do I want my children? If I knew that in order to be great, they had to be doing things that were risky.
Or even if you knew going down that road, how many of the people that you looked to and said, great artist, I want my son to be like that, but you saw like, man, 85% of them,
yeah,
you know, ended up, if they didn't die, they ended up whacked out for a few years. Would you want a chance that your kid could be, is going to fall into that like 15% category of like Eddie Vedder?
Okay. Yeah, we're right. And that's the guy I would hold up and say, that's who I want you to be, because it seems like he has it all, dude. He lives clean. He seems like a happy guy. He, you know, some people have kind of subjugated or, you know, kind of put him in a box as like kind of a nerd or lame-o or whatever. But, you know, I don't know. He seemed to party with all those guys. Give as good as he got, yeah, back in the 90s. Bands like Bad Religion toured with him and like love him. And those are guys that I love those punk guys. So like, I don't know. He seems well respected. And then they went out of their way, or he kind of went out of his way to steer the band toward a niche audience of hardcore Pearl Jam fans that he wanted to please. So they kind of got out of the mainstream that they didn't really want to be in, I guess. I guess you make your $150 million, and then you get out of the mainstream, and then you just make albums for your little niche core audience. And it seems like he has it all. Like, that's the guy that I want my kids to be like.
Yes, best life ever right there.
Yeah, yeah. So then
now we've set those parameters. Would you be willing for Jack or Dom to chance being that 15%, or would you rather see them go 21 Pilots?
Yeah,
this
no.
is tough.
I would never want them to be. I would rather, honest to God, I'd rather them be Mortgage Brokers and 21 Pilots members.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be my choice. I'd be like, maybe music isn't for you then, if you're going to make a song that bad, dude. So, yeah, I think you can have it all. Maybe I just have to teach them how to do drugs. Maybe that's all it is, Jones. Maybe these guys just did not have the right teachers. Maybe Eddie Vedder found like the drug guru, the Timothy Leary, who taught him.
Yeah, but I mean, do you really think your resume speaks to a Timothy O'Leary?
No,
I mean,
no.
You think you're the man for the job?
No, well, no. I'll find them. The best drug teacher money can buy. I'll spare no expense.
So you'll bring one in.
Okay. Yeah, we'll fly one in. Nice. So, but that list that you went down, dude, it's so exhaustive. Like, it certainly the 60s were just as bad. 60s and 70s. Like, am I wrong? Like, this is not unique. It just feels like we're experiencing what, like, our parents experienced in the 80s and 90s when the people from the 60s and 70s were all dying, right?
I guess. I mean, you look at, well, those are always two compared musical generations, like, the late 60s, like 67 to 71 and like 91 to 95. Those are kind of looked at as like the two great eras of guitar driven music.
Right.
So they did, you know, the participants in both those eras do seem like they mirror each other.
And oddly, like the hair metal dudes, they're all still rocking at like Tailgaters and Bolingbrook and stuff. Like those guys, you would think those the people that were like putting makeup on, like they were all going to die of AIDS and all the heroin overdoses and stuff. But those guys are all living clean, bro.
That is funny. They did seem to power through. Like, what would it be about hair bands that would give them the leg up that would allow them to survive? That does seem odd.
They have superpowers, dude. It's the hair.
Name a hair band guy that died? I can't think of one.
Yeah, I mean, Lemmy Kilmister hit 70 at least. Like, you know,
is
that
he
guy
hair metal though?
Well, I mean, just that, like, you know, whole era. You're right, a hair metal guy like Blackie Lawless from Wasp. I think he's still running around, dude. And there have been a few dudes here and there, but I think, you know, they're all playing the festival circuit still.
Yeah, I can't think of one guy.
So the list,
I'm
going to take Chris Cornell off of the list that you postulated or you threw forward. Like, you gave me the list of all the people.
So you want to remove members from the list, because I have a name that I would like to remove from the list as well.
Oh, you're going to take a name off too. Yeah, and I have specific reasons why I want to take this guy off the list.
Okay.
But because a lot of those guys, they were all accidental. Or they were all heroin overdoses and a drowning. Except Kurt Cobain. And maybe he has to come off the list as well.
I will let you know.
Okay. All right. More about this. Who's coming off of the list of dead 90s rock stars? Up next, Jones and Mike.
and triggered snowflakes. Two dudes say the shit you say, think, and feel. And now, we're ready to blow this shit up. Announcing Jones and Mike version 2.0. Coming to a phone, car, or computer near you. Live video and audio. Anywhere you are. Any way you like it. Anytime you need it. Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/JonesandMike. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/JonesandMike. Support the show. Join our community. Get rewards. And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike launches when we reach our first goal of just $100 a month. Get the show for not much dough. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Coming soon.
Jones, whenever there's a death like Chris Cornell or Robin Williams, I get immediately a little bummed out, because then I'm going to face an onslaught of people that are like, dude, depression is real. And it is. This is the saddest day of my life. People have such pain and all of this nonsense. And I'm a hardcore purist in this regard. If you kill yourself, you have committed murder. And when you're a murderer, you're out. I cut you off. You're dead to me. So, as far as I'm concerned, Chris Cornell, bad guy. Bad guy. He committed murder, Jones. That's not like a Ten Commandments thing either. It's like, it is, but it's also it's just the worst thing you can do, dude. He left his wife and his kids as a murderer.
Yeah, you know, I get what you're saying. I used to feel that way as well. Years ago, would just have that absolute look. It's just something you never do.
In my youth, I was a hothead like you too, Mike.
Yes, absolutely. And now, over the last few years, I don't see it that exact same way anymore. And I just, I mean, it does seem like there's something to be said. Like, I don't think it's just simply like someone offs themselves and they're a coward for doing what they did. Cause I have a feeling you dip so low mentally that you're convinced, even though you're Chris Cornell and you're going to be a money-making machine, if you choose to be, for the next 20 years, you just feel like, okay, well, I've got this far.
Clearly, it's money isn't what's motivating you, though.
No, but I mean, in terms of being a breadwinner, in terms of supporting your family, you get so low that you just are convinced, whether you're a Chris Cornell or a Robin Williams, that everyone's just better off without me. Now, having said that, I do have to say, with regard to Chris Cornell's situation, I do find it odd. So he finishes his concert. He goes back to his hotel. He has a conversation with his wife. And he says, hey, I think I've taken one or two more Ativan than I was supposed to. And I kind of thought to myself, well, how does that happen?
What's Ativan? Like a sleeping pill or something?
It's an anti-anxiety.
Oh,
so it would make sense. You get done with your show. Like, there's a part of me too that has to admit, like, I don't like anti-anxiety. Like, what are you anxious about? People have loved you and have given you money for 25 years. So that's something that I do struggle with.
I could see having anxiety before the concert.
Right, but I just wonder if it's just so powerful, the energy of all those people, that you're just like still sizzled, and the show ends, you're wired, you feel like you can't function, and you go for your prescribed Ativan. Now, I don't know anything about Ativan or taking anti-anxiety medication, but like, I do know about taking ibuprofen. And I know when I go and I take an ibuprofen and I look at the label and it goes one pill per 6 hours, I put one pill in my palm, put it down the gullet, and I know I'm good. So it just felt odd to me that he reached out to us and was like, I think I took one or too many, and he was slurring.
Uh-huh.
So he's talking about taking one or too many Ativan. And I just think, well, how? What do you mean? Like, how do you take more than you were? Was there one ibuprofen or was there three ibuprofen?
Yeah, when you're taking 27 or something, ibuprofen. You take 27, you can't, oh, was that 31 or 27? Oh, I lost count. Oh, no.
So that's the thing that, like, has me a little bit tripped out about it. Like, I'm not, maybe I kind of am on the wife's side. Like, if, like, it had to be, it had to be the drugs that were just, like, getting into his head. I mean, it would just seem odd. He wraps up a show, talks to his wife, and in 40 minutes, dead. But he wasn't sure if he took one or too many Ativan that he was supposed to. It seems like when you watch like any kind of sporting event or never mind, just TV in general, and you see an ad for like Papraptor, you go through the list of all the things, side effects that can happen to her. I've heard numerous times where it's been suicide, occasion for the public.
Yeah, so is she saying that Ativan was the thing that caused the suicide, or
yes.
Okay? And but as far as we know, where we sit today, Ativan is not like you know, when you're watching TV and it has all the side effects, and suicidal thoughts is one of the side effects. Ativan doesn't have any side effects along those lines. Is that the belief?
Well, so they have had, they said that there are adverse effects to Ativan. And one of them is advanced stages of depression. Huh. So that seems weird that it's supposed to be addressing the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it could exacerbate it.
Sure, okay? Sure.
Say that right? Yeah,
I don't know. You put a k in there, and that's fine. I thought you were doing the Yiddish version of the word. I like that version.
Yeah.
Here's what I think. I think he was on something else, and we'll find out. The toxicology reports will tell all. But I think he was on something else. He was already going to do what he was going to do, and she just went, I think you took too many Ativan, honey. And he was like, yeah, all right. As he's getting his belt out of his suitcase, right? So, at any rate, you know, it's... you know, and then he also, you know, he plays In My Time of Dying by Led Zeppelin as part of the last song. I think it was like a montage, Slaves and Bulldozers or something by Soundgarden. And then they've also played In My Time of Dying by Led Zeppelin before in concert.
Right.
But it's like, man, like what a crappy thing to do. Like that to me is like, it's a final goodbye.
It does seem pointed.
And as long as you're going to put that much thought into it, put some thought into calling an 800 number or finding a friend or phoning a friend, something. He put so much effort into this, it seems like. I want it to be more premeditated or less premeditated, more like, I just can't take it anymore. I'm running out into the garage and turning on the car, and in 5 minutes, I won't even have time to, like, reconsider. Like, it seems like it took him days to think this through.
Well, okay, but he is also in the category of persons that are most susceptible to suicide. Like white males between 45 and 60 make up the largest percent of suicide.
Cornell was white. You're coming down on the white side then?
Yeah. I didn't know him to be Samoan. And his children look like they're white.
Okay, fine. White guy, dead.
He's all a white guy.
And dead. White guys, don't white people kill themselves more than others? I thought I had read that.
White people do kill themselves more than others, but the highest percentage of that group even is males between like 45 and 60.
Okay. All right.
So he was right in that sweet spot for that sort of thing.
Mm.
And I put quotes around sweet spot.
That's right.
And I have to admit, like, okay, even myself, never had suicidal thoughts. But I have to say, in the last, like, year or so, I've noticed I get these really, like, woe is me, like, drastic things. Like, just last week, I banged my knee while I was working out and for, like, days was convinced that I had blown my ACL.
Oh, no.
And I was, like, despondent over it. And I was, like, even mad, like,
for
God,
you.
Why? I was working out.
Yeah, for you, that would be bad. Thing. That would be the end. That would be, like, kill yourself territory right there. If you had to be on crutches for 6 months, terrible.
But here's the thing, like, nothing, I didn't know what had happened yet, but there's something about my brain that is allowing me to go to despair so much quicker than it did, say, 10 years ago, right? And even, I even remember last week with you, you were working, you got news from your doctor, and right away, they just had a question about one or two things about your health, and right away, you were like, gotta tell Jill, man, keep that life insurance policy going. I mean, it just, you think you're doing the right things, and then this happens. Like, I don't recall us doing that 10 years ago. Well, so, when you're a Chris Cornell.
Well, wait a second. 10 years ago, I wasn't getting, like, news that was as dire as that, and we'll get into that later.
You don't think so. You don't think so, but did you?
And 10 years ago, you thought you had more time, right? So now we're seeing like that, okay, like for you, the apex of your like activity window or the widest it's going to be is like from here until like 55, really. Would right. you agree? Do you think you'll be like a Mandelbaum out on the ice when you're 80? Think you'll be taking guys?
I think I'll play into my 60s.
Okay. Well, so right. So you can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. And, you know, when you were 25, it still seemed like a lifetime away.
You didn't think about it, right.
Now, if you got an ACL, dude, that might make you think twice about ever getting out there again.
Well, here's the thing. One of my buddies, Black, got an ACL. And he's like, yeah, I think I'm done playing soccer. That'll be it.
And now, does it matter that you don't have a wife and kids presently, and he does, so he's like, I can't get back out there again, I can't put my family through this inconvenience again, whereas you're like, I'm only inconveniencing myself, so I'll just, they could keep repairing ruptured tendons for as I care.
Right, and I probably would go that route, but it was still just so defeating to hear that, in a way where it wasn't defeating. Yeah. But there was just all of a sudden when I get bad news now, way more than say 10 years ago, I'm just like, oh. And so if you're Chris Cornell and your whole life has typically been, oh, and now you're getting to this point of life where it ramps up even more. And then people are like giving you these drugs that should help you with your, but make you, even more, I'm open to the idea more than I had been in the past because I used to be a hard in or you're out guy. And if you took yourself out, then you're worthless. Now I'm kind of the train of thought where, I don't know, like maybe your brain just can't, something chemically goes bad or dissipates and you just can't get out of it.
Yeah, no, I dig what you're saying, and that's why I want you to know, Jones, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24 hours a day. It's nice of them to not close down. It would have been horrible if they had hours on the on their Google listing. Like, we're only open from 10 to 10 Eastern. Right. So 800-273-8255. Honest to God, call it. Like, have you ever called one of those numbers, by the way? Like, every now and then I'll see, like, a Jesus will save you billboard, and I'll call. Like, and they'll be like, we want to talk to you about Jesus. So I'll call the billboard. I'll be driving, and I'll just call. Did you ever call one of the 800 numbers just to see what's doing?
No, right. But I did get a suicide call once when I was at a radio station.
Yeah? Did you save the guy's life? I had one, too.
I did. What I did was I kept him on the line talking about himself.
Yeah.
And then while he would start rambling, then I picked up another phone and I called 911. And during the course of the conversation, I earned his trust, found out where he lived,
yeah,
let them know. And then when he was talking, you know, about his family or whatever, and kind of getting in depth, then all of a sudden the police were there and they said, okay, well, we're going to go approach the door. I said, okay, well, approach the door. And then all of a sudden when they knocked at the door, I was like, oh, it sounds like you have a knock at the door. I'll be here. Why don't you go to the door?
That's not the police at your door. Go answer the door.
Right. So they went and answered the door and the police were there.
Okay. And what happened?
I don't know.
Okay, because that's...
I mean, at that point...
That's exactly how my story is going went down, and now I'm wondering, did it really not happen to me, and you just told me this story years ago, and now I'm imagining that it happened to me? Because that's, honest to God, the exact same way that my story went down, only he yelled at me before he had to hang up. The police approached him, and he started yelling at me, "Why did you call? Why did you do this to me? Why?" And I was like, I had to. And I totally, like, I pleaded for his forgiveness, but at the same time I was like, "Dude, buddy, I love you, man. I don't want anything bad to happen to you." And then he hung up, but he, like, gave me a few choice words. And then he called me, like, a week later. I was working again.
Oh, no.
And he got out of, like, Alexian Brothers and, like, called me, and he was like, "Thanks a lot, man."
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I totally forgot about it until right now, which is making me wonder if I'm not imagining, like, that it happened to me and it really happened just to you.
No, because, well, here's my situation. Did your situation involve a daughter?
No, it was just
this
dude
guy
and
had
me.
A daughter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
So we had two separate incidents where we've talked someone off the proverbial ledge.
Well, right. Yeah, because I do. I love people, but, and I want to do everything I can to help them.
Okay.
But if they do make the most dire of decisions, they're on my shit list. Then that's it.
Okay.
That's it. Okay. Period. Well, end of story. So as far as I'm concerned, Chris Cornell is off the list for killing himself. And he's also off the list because I saw him twice in concert with Soundgarden. And as muscular as their sound was and their bodies, as much as I was, like, psyched to see them, they got blown off the stage both times by Skid Row. And that's almost inexcusable. But Skid Row put on energy, dude. They put on a great show. And Soundgarden came out with, like, these ploddings. Like, this was before, like, Super Unknown and stuff, when they started getting some more melodic tunes. Like, Bad Motorfinger is kind of plodding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, well, see, I saw them when they were touring for Bad Motorfinger. Well, it was like 2 years afterwards. So I went actually to see them in concert with your wife.
Yeah. Okay.
So them and Blind Melon, lead singers, both dead now.
Awesome. What was that? That was a Neil Young tour or whatever they all did. That was so weird.
Yeah, I know. Blind Melon, Soundgarden, and Neil Young. And who'd have thunk it? 20 plus years later, only one still ticking.
Yeah, Neil Young, the last man standing, him and Eddie Vedder laughing all the way to the bank. All right, so Chris is off my list. Who's off of your list?
Well, I never thought I would be taking somebody off of a death list or, you know,
saying
90s rock star death list.
Yeah, but who died too young, who died right before their time.
Right, but I want to take Kurt Cobain off this list.
Kurt Cobain.
And I want to take Kurt Cobain off this list, not because he committed suicide.
Okay.
But because I have now come across a film, a documentary, that has convinced me he was murdered.
Murdered?
Murdered. So when I saw that, I was like, I can't, like, he's technically on the list. But in my mind, it wasn't a depression. It wasn't an overmodulation from drugs. Somebody chose to take him out. And maybe for that same reason, that's why I don't have, like, a Tupac or a Biggie on that list. Were murdered.
Yeah, okay, I dig that.
Now, they were traveling themselves down that path towards murder.
Yeah, Biggie was definitely, he was type 2 already.
Yes.
Yeah, he was definitely not on his way to being 50, let's be honest.
Right.
All right.
So with Kurt Cobain, there's this documentary out there called Soaked in Bleach. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, and I tried to watch a little bit of it, dude, and they, you know, they do the reenactment thing, and, like, if Making a Murderer had reenactments, it would never have been as big of a show as it became. Like, you can't have reenactments in a documentary.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I get that, and the reenactments, you kind of have to look at it and go, you know, it's tough to deal with because you're thinking, okay, someone is providing, like, theatrical emotional content, so that can kind of shift anyone that can really kind of shift an opinion if all of a sudden someone was coming up with a story and saying like, and the husband came home and he beat the wife. And then they cut to a theatrical presentation of a scene and the wife going, ah, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I get that. Now I have to say,
it crosses over into like Lifetime made for TV movie kind of territory. And this documentary from the little I saw looked solid, looked really well done.
It is amazing. Like the evidence in there is crazy. And I do have to say, like, even on the reenactments, like, of course, Courtney Love does not come off well in this thing at all. But at the same point, the woman that's playing her is like doing this whole tripped out, like, oh my God, what's going on? But I have to say, Courtney Love was always like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in any of these reenactments, there's no part where I was like, I don't see Courtney Love doing that. I'm like, I totally see Courtney Love behaving like that.
Like the only time she ever had her act together was when she was Larry Flint's old lady in that the People versus Larry Flint. She was awesome in that.
Right, right. So I'm watching this documentary, and as I'm going through it, I can't. So it follows this guy. It follows this guy named Tom Grant. Now Tom Grant was a private investigator that was hired by Courtney Love days before Kurt was woke up dead. And
days before?
Yes. So he was hired like April 2nd or 3rd, 1st, 2nd or 3rd, and Kurt was found like April 7th or 8th. Like he had like a week. He was like a week
what?
On the case.
He was? I don't remember this at all.
Yeah, but because that wasn't anything that was reported. Like when you go through this whole story, you do have to sit there and go, man, you know, it seems crazy. But at the same point, without the internet and Twitter and viral videos, you know, you kind of just waited to hear MTV like MTV news. And then they would have stories for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of just took whatever they had to say at face value. And that was it. So apparently she contacted this private investigator days before he was found dead and said, I can't find my husband. Help me find my husband.
Oh, yeah.
So this guy goes and starts trying to piece things together, find Kurt Cobain. And early on in the game, he started to think he smelled a rat. And he started to suspect
it wasn't
something
Courtney
was fishy
Love.
With Courtney.
Oh.
And he recorded like everything. If you watch the documentary, there's a ton of audio where it is Courtney Love. And she's talking about like just the craziest things. Like she's even saying like leading up to this, like her album was coming out and she was talking about how, hey, any publicity is good publicity unless you're Michael Jackson, right? Like it didn't sound like a woman that was worried about the whereabouts of her husband and, you know, father of her child. And so anyway, this guy is going through, he does this, he's like investigating, trying to find where Kurt Cobain is.
Ugh.
And like,
what a job, man, leading you to every, you know, two-bit apartment complex in the greater Northwest, you know, region.
Right. Well, that's what he wound up doing. He was going through all these like flea bag motels because that's where Kurt liked to stay, trying to find him. And it was like, dude, it was crazy. So the days like leading up to Kurt's death, like she was instructing him like, don't go to this house, go to this house, he might be here. And he was like, well, what about the home in Seattle? I'd like to go check out the home in Seattle. She's like, don't go there, Kurt's not going to be there. I know he's not going to be there, you'd be wasting your time.
Jeez.
What you need to go is to go to this place and go to that place. So when they were going, when he was doing all these investigations, like he started talking to different people. And at one point, like, it's crazy. He was talking to Courtney Love's – he was talking to, like, Kurt Cobain's attorney. Right. And Cobain's attorney was like, you know, I didn't think anything of it. But I now – you know, I realized that Courtney left a bag here. Uh-huh. And I just went through the bag, and there's something in it I think you should see.
Kurt's head.
And in this bag is a notebook with Kurt Cobain's writing.
Uh-huh.
And this is in Courtney Love's bag. And someone was practicing his handwriting.
What?
Practicing his handwriting.
Oh, my God.
Now, when they found the suicide note from him, because you remember she read the suicide note. Remember she did that thing where she was like at like the scene like, God damn you, Kurt. Why did you do this?
Oh, no. I don't remember that. What? She was like on TV?
She did. She did like this thing where they had like a speaker at Kurt's house because people were like going there in a pilgrimage.
Uh-huh.
And she like spoke and left a message and like all this craziness. But like the last three, four lines, like he has this suicide note that was like all about music. Mm. And then in the last three or four lines is like this disjointed plea, or this disjointed like love letter to his kids and his wife, his child and his wife, like out of nowhere, like, you guys would be so much better off without me. Oh, why? You know, blah, blah, blah. So there is I gave you a cut. It's from Kurt's attorney, this Rosemary Carroll.
Okay.
So,
and this is dealing with,
it is incredible.
This is dealing with the suicide note.
Yes.
All right. From Soaked in Bleach, Rosemary Carroll.
That it's a forgery.
That suicide note is a pastiche of things that he had written before, I think. And of someone copying his handwriting. This is my theory, and it may be, and it's a lot of its intuition.
Yeah.
I think all of that weirdness with Callie and being it, obviously living in the house for several days while there was Kurt's corpse in the other place.
Yeah.
I think it had to do with the suicide note.
Who was living in the place? Did he have like a Cato Kalin?
So that's
Kalin?
Another great piece of information. So the Cobains had a nanny, like a male nanny.
A manny.
And this manny was a former boyfriend of Courtney Love.
That's normal.
And he was living at Kurt's house in Seattle at the time. And he had like some girlfriend that was staying with him. So for several days, Courtney Love was like, don't go to the house. Don't go to the house in Seattle. He's not going to be there. And then she was finally like, I think you should maybe check out the house in Seattle. And the guy goes to the house in Seattle.
It's ready for you now. Go and see it.
Right. And then there are like two letters that are like on the steps, like, well, two pieces of paper. They were a letter from this manny where it was like, Kurt, how could you do this to Courtney? She's such a good person and she loves you so much. And it was like this letter that like held Courtney Love up as like this hero. Uh-huh. And Kurt was the villain, right?
Okay.
And at that time, Kurt was in this other area of the property, like above this garage in this attic.
Dead already. Oh my God.
Yes. And this manny had been staying at the house even while the body was there.
And so as they want us to believe that he was leaving notes on his own steps of his own house, that the manny lived there and the manny was leaving notes ostensibly
to make
outside
it seem
of his own
like
house.
Kurt's alive. Kurt's gonna. We think Kurt's alive.
Right.
We think Kurt's coming back.
Okay.
You know, to make it seem like situation normal.
So, without giving away the whole documentary, is the premise by the filmmakers that the manny is in on it with Courtney and they killed him for money?
Yes, because in about a week before his death, he was on tour. And he contacted this Rosemary Carroll and said, I want Courtney out of the will.
Oh, my God.
And he was planning a divorce.
Oh, Jesus.
And Courtney Love knew this. And they had a prenuptial agreement that would pay pennies on the dollar. But if Kurt died and she's still his wife, the divorce hasn't happened, she gets it all.
Crazy. So, and did this lawyer contemporaneously memorialize, now that we have James Comey to thank for knowing that term, contemporaneously memorialize these discussions with her client like any good attorney should?
I don't understand what that means.
Did she make some notes that my client called today for my hourly billing? I want to make sure that I have written down that he wants to file for divorce. He wants to alter his will. La, 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 la. Did we have any evidence that Kurt had actually called to, like, get these balls yes. rolling? We do.
Yes. No, no. She, yes.
Nice. Yes. Nice. Okay. Yes. All right, so now I got to watch this documentary. Damn it. Why didn't I watch it?
Right. So, and then here's the other thing, though, too. What's crazy about it is when they found Kurt and they did the toxicology report on him, they found 3.5 times the lethal dosage of heroin in his system.
So this is the other cut you gave me about his yes. toxicology.
So this is a number of investigators, researchers, and a toxicology expert talking about Kurt Cobain's heroin levels.
Yeah, he took more drugs than a Brahma Bull could take, it sounds like. This is from yes. Soaked in
the
Bleach.
The toxicology report from Kurt Cobain's autopsy indicated a heroin blood level of 1.52 milligrams per liter.
5 milligrams will produce a level of 0.035 milligrams.
Most users, even heavy users, only use up to 40 to 60 milligrams in one hit.
So you can see, to reach 1.52 milligrams per liter, you're talking about an amount that would certainly have exceeded 200 milligrams that were injected into Kurt Cobain.
3 times the amount that would be considered lethal. I think very legitimate questions have been raised about the level of heroin.
We have not, in 18 years, found a single case where somebody could have the level of heroin in their body that Kurt did and still remain conscious.
So they're saying that it's not like he just went on a party binge and he did a little bit more than he normally does. He lost his mind for the night. Like, he took like 3 times more than any junkie of all time ever took.
Right. So think about that. And like, heroin's like a knockout drug. You know, you're supposed to take it and then bam, you're just flat on your back. So he takes 3.5 times the lethal dose. Mm-hmm. He's up in this attic, takes 3.5 times the lethal dose. When they found his body, the heroin kit was all there, but all perfectly put, and they have pictures of it, all perfectly put away in the box. He had his wallet out to identify him. And, you know, he had this shotgun in his lap. So he takes 3.5 times the lethal dose of heroin and is able to put all of his drugs away. And yeah. then he's able to get this gun. And wait, forgot the wallet. Put the wallet out there so they know who I am.
Oh, geez.
And then he fixes this gun. And here's another interesting part. The shell that fell from the gun fell to the opposite side. So wherever that's like, I don't know, what's it called when the shell comes out? Is that a chamber where the shell pops out?
Yeah, discharge or
discharge.
Something. You know, whatever.
So whatever the little discharge gate is, was like, let's say, pointing to the left, but the shell was on the right side.
Oh, wow. So how did the cops not, like, you know, do the whatever, the forensic testing and, like, see all this and go, hey.
It looks like she had some dudes on her team, because this investigator, so this Tom Grant guy, the day that Cobain dies, he's in Seattle, or I'm sorry, the day he's found, he's in Seattle. He goes right over to the home and says, my name is Tom Grant. I'm a private investigator for Courtney Love. I was hired to find Kurt Cobain. And I think I have some information that would be of interest to you.
Hmm.
The people came back to him, whoever cop was running the scene, his assistant came back and said, we'll give us your name and number. We'll reach out to you and then we'll let you know if we need to speak with you. And they were Tom Grant guy was just shocked. He's like, how could someone, like, if I'm running an investigation and someone comes up and goes, I'm a private investigator. I was actually this dead guy. I was trying to find him and I have some information for you.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you. And they never contacted him. You would think that any real investigator would say, tell the assistant, grab the guy right now, bring him in, or put him in the back of a cop car. I'll be out there in 2 minutes.
Don't murderers show back up to the crime scene, arsonists and stuff? Like, some guy shows up at a crime scene And you don't detain that guy.
You have to talk to him.
Totally.
So when you look at all of those things, and then here's another thing. So the day before Courtney Love hired this Tom Grant guy, there were 9 phone calls to
the Manny.
There were 9 phone calls to the Manny in Seattle.
Yeah, the Manny and Courtney Love, unbelievable.
Yes,
but she must have been blowing the whole police department, or at least a significant membership.
Well, you know, she had an army of junkies. And she did a lot of work through these army of junkies because she would just buy them everything. So I'm sure she was just open to splashing out cash.
Dude, we need an army of junkies, bro. We need an army of junkies bad.
Well,
that's cool.
They're willing to do a lot.
That's so cool, man.
You know, you have an army of junkies, and you have your own rock career where you can say to yourself, look, I got an army of junkies. I'm going to blow all my money on the murder of my husband, because my husband has so much more money than me. It makes financial sense.
Sure.
So you go down that whole path. Like, so when Cobain was like the day before he was reported missing, by Courtney Love, who, by the way, filled out a missing persons report under Kurt Cobain's mother's name in Seattle.
She falsified a police report.
Yes.
And was that proven?
Yes, that is. Well, no, she went under. I don't know if it's like, I don't know if you can, just because you're a celebrity, say, I don't want to say it's my name, so let's just say it's his mother's name.
Well, that sounds like it's like a perjurious thing or something, you know?
It does. But when like MTV was reporting, oh, Kurt's mother was worried about him and filed this police report. A search warrant or whatever. Mm. It was a missing persons report, search warrant. Mm. It was Courtney Love that did it.
I think you need an Ativan. You need just to relax, man. You're so up. You want to prove the case and be the judge, jury, and executioner on Courtney Love right now. You're so gooped up about it.
Well, it blew me away. It blew me away. Like, I couldn't. It's poor choice of words, given what happened to poor Kurt. But yeah. I couldn't believe that you see all these facts of this case come out and you go, oh, my God. And we knew none of it.
We knew
none of it. No. Whatever story that we were fed, like even part of the story, and they showed like all these MTV reports. But a week previous, Kurt Cobain was found in Italy with a suicide attempt of 60 pills and blah, blah, blah. Courtney put that story out there. They actually talked to the doctor in Italy that worked on Kurt Cobain. And he's like, there were no 60 pills. 60 pills is not an accidental suicide.
You think that would have been the shot over Kurt's bow at that point, where he's like, I wasn't even in Italy last week. Like, who's putting this out there? Like, somebody's.
No, he was in Italy. He was actually in Rome when he called his attorney to say, I want her out of the will.
So did he know that she planted that story, do you think?
No, because that's what she said. She was saying all this stuff retroactively. And again, this is before the internet.
Okay.
So she came out with this story afterwards going, oh, Kurt killed himself. And he had 2 uncles that killed themselves too. It's the Cobain curse. And they went back to family friends of the Cobains and like, there was no Cobain curse. His uncles didn't commit suicide. One uncle, and they just described how they died. Like, one uncle in a drunken stupor fell down a flight of steps, hit his head, and died from like a hemorrhage.
Who hasn't had an uncle like that, though? That's every family.
Right. But the other uncle was like a police officer, and he was in the middle of a bar, and he went down, his gun fell out of his holster or whatever. It went off and it hit him.
Oh, my God.
There's even a news story. They even show the news, like a news clipping of where other patrons are saying, like in the middle of the bar, he's like, is everyone okay? Did anyone get hit? Because he didn't realize he was the one that got hit.
Jeez.
But they weren't suicides. And here's Courtney Love going, it's the Cobain curse. But you didn't have this. You didn't have the internet where like people will sit there and like study the script from some typed letter and go, that script wasn't available in 1992. This is a forgery.
Right.
Like, you didn't have to deal with those things.
I don't understand how like a Diane Sawyer or a Dateline or something in the last 20 years hasn't like gotten together with Kurt's sister and said, hey, you've got a story to tell? Sit down with us. I don't understand.
I don't know.
And then meanwhile, like, this movie is on YouTube. It's called Soaked in Bleach, if you want to watch it. And it gets shut down for copyright infringement, so it keeps hopping around YouTube. So,
yes, but I've found it pretty easily again and again.
Okay. All right. And so you recommend it.
Yes.
And I'm going to have to watch it now. It's an hour and a half. I mean, I've wasted an hour and a half doing far stupider things than watching this, even though it has reenactments. That I'll get past that.
Yeah, I mean, although I will say this, in defense of the reenactments, as you're watching them, just say to yourself, the way that they're presenting Courtney Love, did she never not present herself like this?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah. That's the one thing that maybe that's wrong to legitimize reenactments like that, but the whole like, oh my God, she was always like that.
Yeah, so what you're telling me, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that Courtney Love is the greatest criminal mastermind of our lifetime, this side of D.B. Cooper.
She's the greatest criminal mastermind of the 20th century.
Of the 20th century, including D.B. Cooper.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's high praise right there. And so because of that, you are convinced that Kurt Cobain, you, Brian Jones, a legal entity separate from Mike Noonan. So if there's a lawsuit, Courtney Love and legal representation,
you're such a wimp.
I cannot be sued here. Jones, you are saying that you believe Courtney Love and the Manny and half of the Seattle Police Department or whatever town or suburb they were in, they killed Kurt Cobain.
It does appear to be that way.
It does appear to be the case. All right, so you're going to take Kurt off of the list because you can't have a murder victim on the list. It has
no,
to be
yeah,
people who
fault.
Tragically died young before their time. And I'm taking Chris Cornell off because I can't get it on board with suicide victims. That's the thing. Suicide victims. Suicide perpetrators. Like today, in All Access, an industry, you know, radio trade rag, the headline was this blah, blah, blah festival in St. Louis, some radio station, canceled due to the passing of Chris Cornell. It's like he didn't have a coronary. He hung himself with his belt or something in a Detroit hotel room. Like, I don't even think you can use the term passing. Just please don't call it like it makes it sound like it was such a peaceful thing. He died with family and friends at his bedside. Like, no, he premeditated murder is what this was. To some degree, I heard a DJ on the radio call it like, you know, I'm just really struggling with Chris's, being taken by suicide, being taken by suicide, Jones. So that's why I'm taking Chris off the list. I want to be. To be a little harder. We got to be a little harder on the suicide perpetrators.
If you will let me take Kurt Cobain off the list, I will let you.
We each get one.
Chris Cornello.
We each get one. All right, fine. Chris and Kurt, you're off the list, and the rest of you guys, stop killing yourselves. It's enough already. Jones, I swear to you, I will not be killing myself ever, but certainly not with burritos anymore. You alluded to my health concerns, and I want to share with you the truth about my impending demise. Up next on Jones and Mike.
And triggered snowflakes. Two dudes say the shit you say, think, and feel. And now, we're ready to blow this shit up. Announcing Jones and Mike version 2.0. Coming to a phone, car, or computer near you. Live video and audio. Anywhere you are. Any way you like it. Anytime you need it. Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think. It's the sh** dudes say that women want to hear. Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Support the show. Join our community. Get rewards. And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike launches when we reach our first goal of just $100 a month. Get the show for not much dough. Dudes Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Coming soon.
all. I'll never lie to you, Jones, and say I partied as hard as a Chris Cornell or a Kurt Cobain, but I have had my debaucherous nights of too much beer, too much whiskey, far too many women, and several burritos to cap it all off at the end of the night. And I think that I've reached the end of my burrito run. It was a great run. It was a great run.
And what brings you to the end of this run?
Well, this week, women were approaching my wife on the streets and crying. And that's not unusual, I'll add. People come up to my wife all the time, and they speak about me and that she's married to me, and I'm so sorry that you're married to this man, and then they start crying. This week, they were crying because they had heard about my heart issues.
Okay.
My children caught wind of the fact that I had a heart scan, like a Heart Check America thing.
Yes.
And where you go to the hospital and they put you on the little tray and then they put you into the MRI machine and right. they make you hold your breath and the thing spins around you. And in like a minute, it takes a scan of like your whole torso and it thin slices your heart. And in my case, it saw that I have a lower anterior descending artery issue, which I shouldn't be disclosing probably for insurance purposes right now, but you're a mensch.
I'm not going to say anything.
I can trust you.
I'm operating on this show today with just trusting that Courtney Love will not sue me. And that no one will report your heart condition to your insurance provider.
Well, right. Hey, man, you guys already underwrote, man. As long as I don't ever get rid of that policy, dude, you got to honor that thing. I got a term and I got a hole. So that's it.
True.
Keep that stuff in effect. So here's the deal. I get done with this test. Then they have some nurse in there, and they're not even good about the nurses like being hard. Like they should be hardcore selling you at that point. Like read you the results and then start talking to you about the cardiologist at the hospital they want you to see and get you into the sales funnel. I was disturbed by how terrible at sales they were, but they did their job well enough because she tried to scare me. She tells me all these dire things. You have heart disease and this is, you know, for your age, this is horrible. Basically over the span of 40 minutes, that's essentially what she said. And I'm just sitting there like, yeah, okay, all right. I know I have to make some changes. There's no question. Let's not oversell it, Sally. But
what is her name, Sally?
They're all named Sally. Every nurse is named Sally.
Got it.
Yeah. And so I left the office. I start doing my homework. I talk to you, and I'm like, all right, I got to tell my old lady to definitely make that life insurance payment. I don't want what happened to my old man was letting policies lapse and stuff at the end. And so I would never want that to happen in my situation. I got to make sure that it's paid up. And started calling around and getting the runaround from the medical community, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to get an appointment for a cardiologist. In the span of this, my daughter finds out about this and she goes on like Insta and she goes, prayers for my father who has a heart issue. And, you know, he may, may be dying. Like, I have no idea what she was putting out there in social media. But like it was then circulating throughout the kid community and then going upward to the mom community. Sure. And then the moms were converging on my wife on the street. And my wife, it has been kind of like a little bit too lax about this anyway, but not that there's anything to do. She doesn't have to go march in Daily Plaza or anything. She just has to less fried foods. Help me out. If I have to go run, let me go run. Just give me a little more leeway here. And help me out just a bit at the grocery store, and then I'll take care of the rest. But it would be nice if there was a little more concern. She's been totally like, it's nothing, big deal, whatever. But then women are coming up to her on the street and crying.
And does this have any effect? So when other women are coming up and crying to her, where she goes, oh, maybe this is a little bit more serious.
No, she's still just, again, we laugh things off probably a little too much, I guess. So, she just continued to laugh it off. She's like, no, that's so sweet. It's no big deal, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, I know these women and they didn't say a peep to me. So they're going up to my old lady. So apparently they're cool with me dying. They're just not cool with my wife being a widow, if that makes sense.
What would you think if they knew Jill had if they knew that Jill had a side piece? Do you think they would then be happy for her? knowing that you were about to face your demise, but then there was a side piece already locked and loaded.
Yeah. Just
slide right in.
Yeah, we know that you speak highly of Don at the office.
Yes.
And so they'd be cool with that? Screw you, Jones. No, I have idea.
I'm not saying this. I'm saying, do you think, are you so convinced because they reached out to Jill but didn't reach out to you and they were fine with you dying but Jill not being left alone, that if they knew Jill wouldn't be left alone, they would actively be like, Mike's dying.
They either were fine with me dying but not fine with her being a widow, or they were respecting my privacy but they wanted to let her know, hey, if you need a casserole, we're here for you.
Right, right.
And doing a women's solidarity thing like that.
See, that's the thing too, though. Like, with guys, you kind of feel like with women, they like to open up to each other and talk about the feelings and what's going on. And with guys, there's almost kind of this built-in, like, I'm not talking about it. There's a wall. So maybe they just kind of assumed, because you're kind of a...
Watch it.
Like a sandpapery-ish guy. You know, you're not like a panty waist dude. I'm trying to say this in a complimentary way.
Thank you.
So maybe they were thinking like, no, he's not the type of guy that would want a lot of sympathy or any sympathy, that they would be fine with.
I would take advice, though. Like, you gave me advice. You were like, look, you got a short fuse. You got to do something about that. I want you to start meditating. You got to clean up your diet. You got to get active 5 days a week. Body weight, kettlebells, running, sprints, you know, and so thank you. Well received.
And how has the meditating been going?
It's hard, dude. It's hard to carve out time for that, I gotta be honest, even though it's only a few minutes. But, like, if you don't have it as part of your schedule or your routine, it's very tough. Like, I have to drive somewhere to do it. Like, I can't do that here.
Could you do it at the office? Don't you guys have all these little private rooms?
Well, yes, and I have. There's like a music room. It's soundproof, and so I go in there. So, good point. But, I mean, again, like, you have to, like, schedule it. So, like, I got to be honest, dude. Like, you know, while I admire you for your adherence to these wonderful life, practices, your lifestyle and these practices are simpatico. If you had four mofos running around here plus a wife, dude, you wouldn't be meditating. You wouldn't. There's no way. You wouldn't be eating quinoa. You'd be eating whatever the hell was left.
Well, I understand that aspect of it. I understand. In terms of diet, you have to have your wife be on board with you. In terms of the meditating, I think there are ways around that. And the exercise, you just have to do it. Like, it's not a choice thing. You just have to do. What are you drinking, by the way?
Tecate, actually.
Okay, yeah.
Very good. Yeah, very affordable. I love it.
Okay. It's just, what made you veer away from the Coors?
I don't know. I just, you know what? I just
want to. Is it a healthier brand of beer?
If I only have a couple of days left, I want to just try different things in those final days.
Fair enough.
But for all I know, Tecate, you know, cleans out your arteries. We'll find out. So here's the thing. I then saw a cardiologist. The cardiologist was like, what's your number? 195? Like, they measure the calcification on the outside of the artery, and that supposedly correlates to the what's going on in the innards.
Got it.
So they can't actually look inside unless they actually jam an angiogram in there, and we're not there yet, thankfully. So he takes a look at my numbers, and he's like, not 195. He's like, I don't even get upset until it's over 1,000. You're fine, dude. Just get on a statin. I'll write you a script and get the hell out of here. And I'm like, but then the nurse was so, like, adamant that I was dying. So, are you sure, sir? Are you really a cardiologist? Just because you're in a suit. So
those bimbos don't know anything.
Yeah, I'm like, Sally downstairs made it sound like I got to go get my affairs together. What? Now you're saying that the scale goes up to 1,000? I thought it only went up to like a 400. So the bottom line is they got to get better at their heart scan post, bedside manners deal. But this was a good wake up call and a good shot over the bow. And, I'll accept advice if you have advice for us. At Jones and Mike on Twitter, info@jonesandmike.com, or call us up, 872-701-0999. I'll take any advice anyone's got, but apparently I got the Widowmaker going on, Jones. The Widowmaker. Isn't that cool? I have an ailment that's called the Widowmaker. That's pretty badass.
That is pretty badass.
And then meanwhile, you know what? If you heard a little woe is me in my voice, it's because I already quit smoking. I don't go to Taco Bell. While I drink too much Tecate, it's not like I never work out. It's like, I could do more working out. I could have a longer fuse. There are some things, but it's like I don't have a ton to cut out.
I wonder if your fuse thing is the biggest part of it.
No, I think it's genetics, dude. I think, everyone in my family's got the same type of, issue. And I can't say anything more because now I'll be violating their HIPAA rules or whatever. But this is a hereditary thing. So
I understand. So I'm not going to ask because obviously it'd be a HIPAA violation. But if Danny has the same thing, blink once and then tap your left ear.
I have no idea. I don't know. That's the thing. We don't talk about this stuff. No idea. And God love him. God love him if he does. God love him if he doesn't. Hey, he's not sitting around whining about it if he does. So I think everyone's got everything. Like, that's the thing, dude. Like, I think everybody, probably even you, over the age of like 35, probably everyone has heart disease. In other words, everyone probably has plaque in their arteries.
Sure.
So for this nurse to be like, you have heart disease. It's like,
Yeah.
Everyone probably does, dude. Unless you've been a vegan from day one and never had any oil or any of the nonsense in Western cooking. So, Todd Marinovich at one point did not have heart disease. Now he probably needs a heart transplant.
God, that's crazy to think about. A guy that was manicured to be the greatest quarterback of all time. You now unquestionably have better innards than.
Yeah, I would hope. I would hope. I probably could play a better quarterback than him right now.
Probably.
So that's the bottom line, is that women will come up to your wife on the street and they will cry for their impending widowness or widowdom. But they won't contact you. And I have to drive somewhere to meditate, which kind of defeats the purpose as far as I'm concerned. Like, there's gotta be a better way.
Well, the meditating, you can get that in, but I'm curious. I think you do have to make an effort to reach out to these ladies and find out why they didn't just say, hey, I appreciate that you guys care. I'm just curious. Like, why am I not approachable? what would it be?
Of course I'm not. No, of course I'm not. That's fine. No, I mean, that would be putting them on the spot, wouldn't it? Like, my wife betrayed a confidence or something.
Well, then you could say, look, I don't know how much time I have left. So I kind of need to know.
Yeah. Will you be there for my wife afterwards? Thank you for what you said to my wife. Why didn't you call me? We're friends on Facebook. It also goes to show you how being friends with somebody on Facebook is not being friends at all. It's worthless. Facebook is worthless. They need to shut that thing down. The likes are fake. The shares are bullshit. The comments are negative most times. And then when you're dying of a heart ailment, or so they think, they don't even contact you. But you're friends. So
yeah, I don't know. I like looking at the pictures of the babies.
Well, right. If you use it just for that, it's fine. So do you have any other advice for me, Jones, except for no more red meat, meditating, drive to a meditation place, sprints, body weights, kettlebells, no more cortisol, gotta lower the stress, longer fuse, which I have been doing better at that.
How's your sleep?
The sleep is getting better, honestly. The sleep is getting better.
Did you get the Chiroflow water pillow?
I should spend the $60 now that I may only have a few years left. I should get the $60 pillow.
See if that gets you a deeper REM sleep. That could have a positive effect on your cortisol levels.
All right, I'll pop. I'll pop for the $60, brother.
Yes.
You convinced me.
There we go.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I owe you. And then that's it then? Sleep?
Well,
water,
you're trying to do all these other things. So next level.
Statin. Diet. What else is there? What else is there?
Try to do the meditation, but let's get the pillow in there.
So less masturbation, more meditation is what you're telling me?
If it's interfering with your meditation, then yes.
Oh, really? All right. Yes. I'll have to carve off a little bit, peel off a little bit of the former's time for the latter.
It might be worth it.
All right, brother. All right. But if this all goes south, I hereby bequeath the show to you, Jones. Shit, Dude, Say with Jones will live on.